Hello and welcome to Medieval Murder, the podcast that brings all things gruesome and historical to the comfort of your own home or a car or wherever it is you're listening from. My name is Hannah Prettyman and I'm here with my father, Kevin Prettyman.
Hello.
To discuss some of the most famous and infamous murders that took place in the medieval and early modern periods. Medieval Murder came to be first as a blog, then as an Instagram, and now as a podcast after I finished my master's dissertation on homicide in early medieval England. The podcast will feature some of the most famous murders in medieval history, some mini-episode series on different types of medieval murders, and interviews with historians and history enthusiasts alike. Are you all ready for this year's Halloween special?
I am.
Yeah. This year isn't as gruesome as years past, but will still be chock full of medieval history. So this year, we are looking at the history of Halloween with a special emphasis of how the Middle Ages influenced how we celebrate the holiday today.
All right.
Halloween has had many names over the years, including All Hallows' Eve. The origins of Halloween can be traced back to the Celtic festival Samhain, which was also the Celtic New Year. Samhain was celebrated among the Celts of ancient and early medieval Britain and Ireland, and marked the transition between summer and winter. However, the Celts also believed that during Samhain, which was October 31st to November 1st, the barriers between the physical world and the spirit world would break down and allow more interactions between humans and the spirit world. This belief brought about the present Halloween beliefs about ghosts and goblins and ghouls coming out on Halloween night.
Oh.
Samhain marked the last day of harvest, after which the Celts would join druid priests and light a fire using a sort of spinning wheel that would create enough friction to spark and light the fire. The wheel itself was considered a representation of the sun.
So, what was this wheel like? Do you know what it was made of? Or
I'm sure it was made of wood.
Okay.
And, yeah, just like a normal spinning wheel, but
somehow they generated enough friction to light that bad boy on fire.
Yeah.
All right.
During this ceremony / celebration, sacrifices were also made, usually cattle, which is slightly corroborated by the Venerable Bede when he said that the month of November was known as Blood Month, when surplus livestock were slaughtered and offered as sacrifices.
Who is the Venerable Bede?
He was a chronicler during the early medieval period, and so he is the one who wrote the history of the English people.
Okay, so was he like a religious guy or
academic? Not a lot of people know much about Bede. So
okay,
yeah.
He just wrote down a lot of stuff and passed it down. Thank goodness for Bede.
Yeah, really. For real. At the end of the ceremony, families or individuals would put a stick or something flammable into the fire and then bring the flame back to their own hearths to relight them, since they would have gone out during the harvest.
Okay.
Now, while Halloween began as a celebration of the Celtic New Year, in the 7th or 8th century, Pope Gregory III designated November 1st as All Saints' Day, which was obviously a time to honor the saints, and was also known as All Hallows' Day. However, some of the traditions of Samhain were incorporated into the holiday, even though it was established by the papacy.
Oh, what traditions did they do?
We will get into that in just a little bit.
Okay.
All Souls' Day was then celebrated on the next day, November 2nd. During this 3-day period, prayers were said for the souls that were trapped in purgatory in order to help them along to the afterlife. So now that we know a bit about the history behind Halloween itself, we'll go into how some of our favorite Halloween traditions originated. Some medieval, some not. Just as a disclaimer, a good amount of what I'm including came from a Library of Congress article by Heather Thomas called The Origin of Halloween Traditions. You should read it if you'd like to learn more. One of the most emblematic parts of Halloween that has historical roots, either from the 18th or 19th centuries, is the carving of pumpkins or jack-o'-lanterns. However, it wasn't always pumpkins that were carved. The tradition originated in Ireland using turnips, and according to Heather Thomas, it is allegedly based on a legend about a man named Stingy Jack, who repeatedly trapped the devil and only let him go on the condition that Jack would never go to hell. But when Jack died, he learned that heaven did not want his soul either, so he was forced to wander the earth as a ghost for eternity. The devil gave Jack a burning lump of coal and a carved-out turnip to light his way. Locals eventually began carving scary faces into their own turnips to frighten away evil spirits.
All right. So
must have been little tiny jack-o'-lanterns if they were.
I don't know. No, you can get some pretty good sized turnips. And I'm seeing, you know, we have the harvest going on, mm-hmm. right? And so you're going to have some leftovers or maybe some that's not really fit for consumption. So I can see where they started
whittling away
on pumpkins, turnips, and I'm like super psyched. I've got some huge squash I don't know what to do with at the end of my harvest.
Ah,
so maybe
whittle away at those squash.
Yeah, I got some monster squash.
Yeah, but just remember Stingy Jack.
Correct. Maybe I don't want to do that. Maybe. I don't know. We'll just see.
Yeah. So we all know that Halloween has become a time for children to dress up in costumes and go trick-or-treating, at least in the U.S. But most people probably don't know is that dressing in costume originated during Samhain. People in the medieval period, when they were celebrating Samhain, would sometimes wear disguises and masks to avoid being recognized by ghosts and evil spirits, and so they wouldn't follow them home.
Oh.
Trick-or-treating itself, though, wasn't really a thing until the 20th century, first in the U.S. and then spreading to other countries. It may have originated with Samhain, as people would leave offerings for the dead, but it most likely originated with the Scottish and English traditions of souling, or guising, in which groups of adults, and later children wearing costumes, visited big houses to sing and collect money and food on November 1st and 2nd, All Hallows Day and All Souls Day. But the more commercial version of trick-or-treating really didn't happen until the 20th century in the U.S.
So let's go back to what they were doing. You know, they were coming, they were singing and looking for food and money, kind of probably like a, you know, get them through. What years would that have been?
I'm going to say 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, maybe.
Okay, so we can kind of see how we've moved from more, you know, maybe a more agrarian type economy to more developed or manufacturing. And now there's kind of this need for, you know, them coming, them singing, you know, where they're probably working somewhere else and not in the fields. And now they need some food or money to hold them over. You know, they don't have their own harvest at this point. Do you think that's going on a little bit?
It could be that, or I'm wondering if maybe there was a poor harvest and that's why that kind of started.
Okay.
It was during times of poor harvest to kind of get them through the winter, maybe.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how, like, Christmas caroling and the singing that they were doing, how they kind of intersect. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I don't know.
You know, because I think we're kind of left with the caroling now.
Yeah.
But no, interesting. Interesting how the times kind of shape people's celebrations.
Yeah.
You know.
Additionally, bats and black cats are really associated with Halloween. That's a big thing, at least these days. And the origination of bats, Samhain was big bonfires to celebrate the end of the harvest and the new year. But a big fire would bring about a bunch of bugs to come towards the light. Well, these bugs and insects would attract bats, who would start swooping around and getting all the insects. And so that's kind of why bats have become a prominent Halloween tradition. Yeah.
Okay.
And
that makes sense. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
And then black cats, you know, black cats have been associated as, you know, evil, or shape-shifting. And as we know, the Middle Ages were a time of superstition. And so I think that's kind of where that originates is, you know, witches, goblins, ghouls. Black cats have always been associated as, like, witches' familiars. And so
that's well, kind like, of... We've talked about some of the witch trials in Scotland. I mean, how did the witches or how did... Did you see anything how that fit into Halloween?
You know, I really didn't. I really didn't. Because I don't think the two were very closely associated until later. Because, you know, Halloween and, like, All Hallows Eve were never really associated with the devil, necessarily. It's associated with the dead, but not the devil. And witches right. are more associated with the devil.
Okay, so this is more, I mean, and we've talked about Dracula.
Yeah.
On this podcast,
Vlad the Impaler.
Exactly, where that legend came from. And so that's probably something else that over time became more associated with Halloween than in the Middle Ages or at the time of Vlad the Impaler.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was a short history of Halloween, mostly because I didn't delve too deeply into the research, but it does demonstrate the roots in ancient and medieval periods. But since that was a little short and had less murder and mayhem than a normal medieval murder podcast episode, let's have some bonus content. So here are a few medieval ghost stories to get you in the Halloween spirit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So first, we'll talk about the haunting of Frodriver. I could be saying that wrong. It could be Frodriver. But the story was first written down in the 13th century in the Eyrbyggja saga.
Okay, so he's going to be Scandinavian then?
Yep, anybody from that area can write in and tell me how to actually say that. That'd be great. But the story begins as a Hebridean woman named Thorgunna arrives in Iceland one winter. A local woman named Thurida notices the rich treasures that Thorgunna possesses and presses her to come and stay with her at her home in Froda. Thorgunna refuses to part with any of her precious things, but agrees to stay and work as a servant. Soon, Thorgunna falls ill and dies, but leaves behind a warning. Her bedding is to be burnt, and most of her effects given to local monks. This, she says, is not out of spite, but as a way to protect the settlement from an evil that is coming.
Oh.
Yeah, so maybe Thorgunna had a weird curse on her or something. Inevitably, Thurida can't resist taking the rich bedding of Thorgunna for herself, and sure enough, the residents of Froda begin to fall victim to a series of grisly accidents, Ooh. Ghostly attacks, and mysterious plagues.
Okay.
After a funeral feast is held, they are beset by a crowd of walking ghosts that refuse to leave and which gather around the central fire of the main hall each night. So really, you should listen when somebody is like, the evil is coming, do all of these things.
Yeah, I mean, so do we know the dates? I mean, we lose dates all the time here. You know, it's a window.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm just wondering if these ghosts that beset the bonfire, if it was like Halloween.
Oh, if it was Halloween. It could have been.
If it was Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you shouldn't be greedy.
No, either. Shouldn't be greedy. Especially with a dying woman.
Well, you should always try and honor a deceased person's wishes.
Yep. So all of these ghosts start gathering around the central fire, But deliverance soon arrives when Kjartan, the son of Thrida, engages a local priest to stage a trial. The ghouls are charged with staying unlawfully in the hall, and eventually their leader declares somewhat petulantly, "We have here no longer a peaceful dwelling, therefore we will remove." Seems odd that the ghosts are willing to,
just leave?
Well, and to take part in a trial.
Yeah, it seems like there's something other than ghosts.
Yeah, not a lot of, background to the curse, or, you know.
It sounds like they might have been more, not so much ghosts or ghouls, but just plain old-fashioned party crashers.
Could be. Yeah, they just wanted to attend the funeral, maybe.
I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Interesting.
And then the last ghost story we'll talk about is one of the Byland Abbey ghost stories, which were discovered in fragments from a late 14th century manuscript and are thought to have been recorded by the monk of Byland.
So where did all this take place? Where is Byland?
Byland is a little north of York in England.
Okay. And it's a monastery or an abbey?
An abbey.
Okay.
Yeah. In one of these stories, a man is trying to make his way home with a load of beans after his horse meets with some sort of accident. He sees a terrifying apparition of a horse, and after he tries to scare it away, it begins to stalk him. The spirit then appears as a glowing ball of light in a cloud of hay. Finally, the man confronts the spirit in the name of the Lord, and a ghostly figure appears in front of him. The spirit claims that it means the man no harm and asks to carry his load of beans for him. The man agrees, and the load is carried across a river before reappearing on his back. After this, the spirit vanishes.
Ooh, a helpful ghost.
A helpful ghost and a ghost horse. A little weird.
Yeah, you know, I can't help when as soon as you said a ghost and a, I mean, you know, if you look at some of the Irish things with the hearse pulled by the black horses, and then, you know, the headless horseman prominent, you know, how these stories may have evolved into stories we see throughout history.
Well, I kind of wonder if it you know, Jack and the Beanstalk, he's carrying some beans, you know.
Well,
probably not related, but, you know.
Well, I thought of that early on when you were talking about the beans, but I, you know, we are talking Halloween. I didn't want to.
Well, and what kind of beans? Are they green beans? Are they pinto beans? What kind of beans we got?
Kidney beans.
Kidney beans.
For kidney pie.
Ah. In another local story from Byland Abbey, a spirit accosts two farm laborers, attacking one of them. The man calls on the Lord, and the ghost confesses that it was the canon of Newburgh, excommunicated for theft.
Oh.
The laborer digs up a set of spoons stolen by the ghost, and afterwards its spirit rests in peace. I'm not sure if he returns the spoons, though. I mean, I feel like if he returns the spoons, he's going to be able to rest in peace, but...
I'm thinking he did, but I think that's really... I mean, you don't get many ghosts identifying themselves like that, you know?
Yeah, well, but he needed help.
Right. He wanted to make it to the other side.
Yeah, he's stuck in purgatory, just chilling.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, that he would identify himself, ask for help, and get that help, and never be seen again.
Yeah.
Kind of wonder what happened to him.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure there are a lot more ghost stories from the medieval period that we can definitely go into in another episode, or even next Halloween. We can just throw some bonus content at you whenever you'd like, really. Feel free to reach out.
Yeah, no, I've got a book on Irish ghost stories that I'm just starting to delve into. I think they appear to be more recent than medieval times, though.
But that's okay. You know.
There's some good ones. I mean,
well, they might have originated in the medieval period.
Correct. There's a story about a castle, and they all come into the hall, and it's on a windswept coast in Ireland, and they're having this dinner party, and by the end of the dinner party, a couple of guests have fallen off the buttresses into the ocean.
Oh.
And there's some, I don't know, some mystical, magical stuff that has gone on there.
Okay.
And the castle's still there in Ireland today. I mean, but it's, you know, it's kind of falling into the sea at this point.
Oh, okay.
That was kind of interesting. I don't have all the...
Well, I wonder if there's some ghosts still there, if the castle's still there today.
I think there are probably ghosts everywhere.
Yeah.
Possibly. It's just, are they going to show themselves?
True.
You know, or are you going to be on that same plane at a certain time where you're open to it and they're open to you?
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening to Medieval Murder. I hope you enjoyed our Halloween episode. If you have any listener questions, comments, or topic suggestions, please feel free to reach out via our Instagram account at Medieval Murder or via email at info.medievalmurder@gmail.com. Also, check out our merch available on our website, medievalmurder.org. And if anybody would like to collaborate or be a guest on the podcast, please feel free to reach out. Tune in later for our next podcast.